Good afternoon. Welcome to this afternoon's NAESP webinar on how to write your resume and gain skills for interviewing that ensure success. At this time, I'd like to introduce Dr. Gracie Branch, NAESP's Associate Executive Director for Professional Learning. Welcome, Gracie.
Thank you, Honor, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for being with us today. We're really excited. We were sharing with Baruti that we think that we've had more people registered for this webinar than any other webinar that NAESP's hosted this year. So we are excited to have Principal Cavelli here today. This is a guy who's done it all. You've been an award-winning teacher, been a middle school principal, high school secondary principal. You're a author. You've written wonderful books that have been so helpful to principals and teachers. The Teacher 50, the Assistant Principal 50, the Principal 50. And now we hear that you have a new guide coming out about social justice and equity. So we will be anxiously awaiting that publication. And then just you're just always winning those awards. Probably too many for me to list, but as I was looking through, Baruti, so impressed that you're a Milken.
Yes.
Award winner.
Yes.
That's very, very prestigious. But most of all, I think when I think of you, it's just your passion for what you do. It's your passion for principals. And as I shared earlier this summer, so glad to see your post about social justice and equity, which are issues that are so important to schools now and our nation. So thank you for being here, and I'll let you get started.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you. And good afternoon to everybody out there. I appreciate you being here. And there's so much to discuss this afternoon. I have taken about maybe 4 hours of content and condensed it to this hour. So therefore, what I'm going to ask of you is that you buckle up, no seatbelts, get your pen out, your pad, your phone, your tablet, your computer, whatever it is. And I'm going quick because I want to get a lot in because the topic is so important and I didn't want to leave anything out. Because of the importance of the topic. Cause I'm sure a lot of you all figure I'm talking to an aspiring principals group. So I'm sure that this is the season that you guys are prepping for an interview because you want to be a principal. You didn't go to undergraduate school to be a lifelong assistant principal. Some did. Maybe when we think about the percentage of folks in administration, a very small percentage in the assistant principal field that wanted to stay there. But most of us, it was just a stepping stone to go to the next level in terms of school leadership and then whatever we're going to do beyond that. So this is the season. Folks are interviewing. Folks are sending in resumes. And so the topic, how to write your resume and gain skills for interviewing that ensures success. I'm getting ready to put it in high gear. So let's take a look at some things here. I'm saying here, and we'll look at the resume first. I got a question and the entire presentation will be self-reflective, I might add. I'm not giving you questions that an employer would ask you. I'm giving you questions that you need to ask yourself as you're preparing for the interview. So with that said, let's look at the resume first. Does my resume grab the attention of the employer? That's significant because if depending on where you are, you could be in a district or in a location where you're sending resumes to various different districts and there's one position available, but there's about 500 people who want the same position you do, right? Or there's a few hundred people that want the same position that you want, the same position you desire. So I'm asking you in this question, self-reflectively, does my resume grab the attention of an employer? What is it about your resume that an employer will see it as they are sifting through hundreds? And I used to be there as a principal where I'm sifting through hundreds in terms of an assistant principal that wanted to work, a prospective one, or a teacher that wanted to work with me. And I'm sifting through looking for the one that jumps out at me that I may want to ultimately bringing that person for an interview. Well, what is it about just the paper, the resume itself? That's all I'm asking. What is it about the resume that an employer would say, huh, I've got to see that person? Right. So whether it be the paper, whether it be the font, whether it be the way you formatted it, whether it be the way you worded it, I mean, whatever, you know, that's a whole other presentation in terms of the specificity of number one, which we don't have time for right now. I just want you thinking, but because you have your own creativity, I just want you thinking about yourself relative to what is it that I need to have in that resume? What is it I need relative to the appearance of that resume that when someone looks at it, they say, wow, I want more. And matter of fact, that ties into number two. Does my resume pique the curiosity of the employer? So now here you've got this resume and it's an attention grabber. It's distinguishable from all the others, but now what is it about it that piques one's curiosity that I said, huh, this might be my person. And they haven't even interviewed you yet because of something about that package. See that resume, you know this, but I'm going to reinforce it for you. That resume is your representative. See, that's what it is. It represents you because you can't be the mouthpiece at this juncture because you're not there. The only thing you have there to represent you is an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper that says that's called a resume, right? So now how is that resume representing you? What is it about that resume that piques the curiosity of an employer that I want more? Let me keep going, y'all, because I got a lot to share. Does my resume speak to the specific position I am interviewing for? That one is critical. See, here's what I'm asking. Preparing a generic resume, that's not going to help you because every school is different. Every school district is different, right? Every school has different needs, different everything, right? So now here you are with a generic resume that you're sending out to various different places, that's not going to work. Because a generic resume is going to say to me, if I'm the employer, I'll know a generic resume when I see one. But if on the other hand, I receive a resume that resonates with me because it's speaking directly to my school, it's speaking directly to my needs, my interests, my challenges, my pressures, my demands, my obstacles in terms of my school. Or my district in your case, as you're sending in a resume to become principal, that's the one that I'm looking for. Does it speak to the specific position I am interviewing for as best you can? In some cases, you don't know. There's a pool of schools, right? But you can at least know something about the district so that when whomever receives that resume, they can leave away with the impression this person did their homework, right? Let's keep going. Number four, does my resume tell my story exceptionally well? You know, when I think about this word story, I think about an autobiography, right? And you can't send an autobiography. An autobiography can do more justice for you than a resume, but we can't send autobiographies to an employer. But your resume is equivalent to an autobiography. Your resume is your story. And see, like, I'm an author. I've written many books. And every time the editor starts editing my books, I cringe, right? To be quite honest with you, I cringe. Like, oh my God, they're chopping it up. They're taking things out that I deliberately put in, right? But what they're doing is they're crafting the story so it is palatable and readable and enjoyable for the person who's reading it. See? So over the long haul, I need that editor. But now let's look at you. Your story. You may write a resume, but that resume be so raw that it's working against you instead of for you, right? Does your resume tell your story exceptionally well? Oh man, that's crucial, because anyone can write a resume. But is it telling the story the way you want to tell it? So for example, could be a candidate watching right now and you did exceptionally well in undergraduate school. You did exceptionally well in graduate school. But the superintendent that's going to read your resume or the human resources director, whomever it is, may not be as concerned, or even the director of curriculum or assistant superintendent curriculum, whomever it is, may not be concerned about your grade point average. That may not be the first thing that they're looking for. What they may want to see is, what role did you play toward making the school you just left better? And what role did you play as instructional leader? And within that capacity of instructional leader, did you leave that school better than it was before you got there? Number four, once again, does my resume tell my story exceptionally well? I'm not putting the fluff, for example, the sequence. I'm not putting the fluff at the top of the resume. Nobody, when a superintendent has pressures from a board, pressures from the community, pressures from a family, pressures from the State Department of Education to turn a school around, they're not concerned right now in this moment about your grade point average, right? That was cool when you came out of school and you were seeking that teaching position. But now, is this going to be someone who's going to lead this school out of wherever it may be and whatever the predicament may be into superstar? Well, I need a resume that's going to tell my story exceptionally well. I know you hear me. There's so much more to say on that, but I got a lot to share. Let me keep going. Number five, does my resume highlight my skill set? See, sometimes we forget, we'll look at certain skills that we have and not realize how powerful they are, because we don't know that this is what the employer may be looking for. I'm saying to you, don't take anything for granted. Be mindful of how you sequence, but don't take anything for granted, because what may seem superficial to you or trivial to you because you're so engrossed in it may be something very special that an employer may be looking for. So does your resume highlight your skill set? Number six, does my resume sell my potential? Man, that's a big word. I need like an hour on that one. Listen, I'm saying to you, your resume has to sell you. Your resume is your sales pitch, because you may never have an opportunity of a one-on-one with an employer before that resume convinces that employer to make that phone call. It's not like you can initiate the call and get through the gatekeeper, right, to get to that superintendent or that assistant superintendent. So that resume has to sell you. It's your sales representative. It's your sales pitch. And I'm asking you, if you gave me your resume to look at, and if I don't know how many on here, but y'all don't be sending me on them resumes, right? 257. Don't send me on them. But what I am saying, if I saw it, would I be sold? See, when you look at your own resume, are you sold on your own resume? Do you feel within your gut that this is the resume that's going to distinguish me from 500 other people and land me the position? See, that matters. That matters. Let's go. Number seven, does my resume distinguish me from the crowd of applicants? I kind of spilled that over from number ones. I don't need to dwell on that one. Those of you who checked in late, you see the recording later on, because I got to maximize this time, right? How we looking on time? Okay, we're pretty good. Matter of fact, I'm looking at time. I can go into this a little more. I'm saying to you, folks, I remember when I was applying for my first principalship, right? And so many others were out there. I had to be concerned about the paper stock. I had to be concerned about the sequence. I had to be concerned about what I put in there, right? So all I had at the time of applying for an assistant principalship was what I did as a teacher. So I had to really accentuate that. I had to illuminate that. you're an assistant principal right now. If you are just one of those unfortunate assistant principals, and those of you that know my work, you know exactly where I'm going with this. If you're one of those unfortunate assistant principals who spends the bulk of your time disciplining students, you're a full-time disciplinarian, that may not be, matter of fact, it probably won't be what's going to distinguish you from the pack. You're going to have to look at some other things. If you didn't get to engage in them, at least you got to learn about them, because it's got to be something at the top of that resume, right after your name. It's got to be something in the top of that resume relative to your work experience that goes beyond that you were someone that loaded buses, supervised cafeterias, and discipline students. Because for me, if I'm looking for someone to come and turn around one of my schools, I'm not looking for that one that was a full-time disciplinarian. I don't need you. I could probably use you as the dean of students, but I don't, or the head of the in-school suspension, but I don't need you as the principal of the building. So you're going to have to look at that and make sure that you have what a principal needs in order for you to become that principal that that superintendent wants to hire. Number eight, does my resume diminish me as a candidate? Now, there's a method to my madness relative to the sequence of these points here in the presentation. Because here I'm talking about distinguishing you, but here number seven, distinguishing you, but then in number eight, I say, but does your resume diminish you as a candidate for the position? Because see, the resume could be the problem. I cannot tell you the number of people that write me, whether on social media or emails, that write me or figure out my phone number and call me and say to me, I can't even get the interview, Principal Kefele. And a lot of times it boils down, yeah, of course not. Sometimes I look at their resume, of course, I wouldn't give you an interview either with this resume. The resume is the problem. It's not you as an individual. It's not you relative to your skill set. It's that selling piece. It's that resume. And it's in a lot of cases, it's that cover letter. That cover letter has to sell you as well. So if that cover letter is not written, oh, it's got to be professional. And then that resume, and it's got to sell you. And if it's not doing the job, that in and of itself may be the reason that you got to travel. You got to look hundreds of miles away from home to find a job when the job you want, the job you desire is in your neighborhood, but your resume is what canceled you out, right? So you gotta make sure that your resume is not the liability. Let's keep moving. Number nine, does my resume in any way hurt my opportunity for an interview? So I kind of talked about the two at the same time to cut down on time. So does my resume diminish me as a candidate? And then does my resume in any way hurt my opportunity for an interview? So in other words, now is there something in the resume itself that could be keeping you from being considered a viable candidate? See? So you got to look and see what's in there. What's in there that this fluff that you can kind of carve, you know, fat on the bone that you can carve off and make sure you've got the right stuff in there. Let's keep it moving, y'all. Number 10, does my resume have the potential for inspiring an interviewer to call me, right? What's in that resume that person picks up the phone? Look, I'm not wasting any time here. Let me call this person. See what's in there. You see, you got to partner up now with your thought partner, your accountability partner. You got to partner up with people who are going to be honest with you. If these are not people who are going to be honest with you, if these are the people who are going to tell you all the things that you want to hear, all the things they think you want to hear, all the good things, all the nice things, and not tell you the cold, hard truth, those are not the people you need. You need someone, that thought partner, that accountability partner that's going to say to you, look, you need to rethink this, right? Because you want to inspire somebody on the other side that's going to give you an opportunity, right? So let's keep moving, folks. Man, this time is flying. Let's look at that interview. Now the way I set this up, you're going to notice 20 questions, 10 in each part one and two. But they're not questions that an interviewer would ask you. They're questions that I stand on that you must ask yourself. in preparation for the interview, right? Questions that you must ask yourself. And I stand on these 20 questions. I do know definitively that there are literally tens of thousands of people who are working in administration throughout America and internationally because they took these 10 questions, these 20 questions seriously. I can tell you that definitively, right? So just write everything down, take pictures of the screen, and then we'll tell you how to stay connected to me, those of you who are not already. Let's go. First question is, I think, the obvious one. Am I ready? See, am I ready? If you find yourself, interview is tomorrow, interview is next week, whatever it is, and you find yourself fumbling around and uncertain, anxious, then you're probably not ready. Because you're ready when you can kind of stand there, look in your mirror, and you know your stuff, you feel fully prepared, and I'm ready to step into that building or online and land my position. I'm ready. And here's the mindset. Without being cocky or egotistical, the mindset is, I got this. That's the mindset. If you can't go to your mirror, right here, if you can't go to your mirror and look at you, look at yourself looking back with the confidence that I got this. I'm ready. I'm ready to go. And the mindset's not so much I'm ready for the interview. The mindset is I'm ready to take this position. See, I'm ready to land this position. Like those of you out there who are sports fans, just imagine your favorite team. Maybe one of your teams is playing in the Super Bowl this Sunday. Just imagine one of those teams walks out on the field, looks at the opponent and says, oh man, I don't know about them. They kind of good, right? Well, that's the same thing. You go into, you prepare, you getting ready to go to your interview and like, man, it's like 200 other people vying for this job. I don't know. Then you've just talked yourself out of your position. You were not ready. So when I say, are you ready? Let's talk about that. Let's go a little bit further. What do I know about the school I'm interviewing for? Now I'm going to make an assumption in this regard, just for the create a scenario that you do know the school, because in all cases you don't. For my interviews, I always knew the exact school. I led 4 different schools in my lifetime, and each time I knew what school. So before I walked in, I learned the school. I knew the school like I knew myself, right? So I know their data, which is their story. I know their issues. I know their challenges. I know their obstacles. I know their demands. I know the names of the administrators. I know the names of some of the teachers. I know the community concerns. I mean, whatever. I went in that school knowing the building as if I had already been working there. So I can speak as someone with authority. Imagine you go into an interview at a school, and they start asking you about the school and you scratching your head. Like, for example, can you tell us about the enrollment at this school? The demographics. You're like, oh, I'm not really sure. Or can you tell us our population here? What's our attendance here at this school? I'm not really sure, but I can get back to you. You're done. Can you tell us about some of the programs that we have here? Right. And you don't know. No, you have to go in there knowing. Now, let's say you don't know the school. Okay, fine. Know the district, right? Know the district. But be able to walk into that interview armed with information about either the district or the school. Because if you can dazzle them with district information, you know, the district mission, the district vision, some of the programs that are district initiatives, I mean, there's a lot you can talk about on the district level if you don't know the school. You can go in there sounding like someone who's been working there for a while. Or if it's a district that you already work in and you're just looking to make a move within the district, then fine. You know things, but then you can enhance it for an interview. But going back to number one, are you ready? Not if you don't know that school. Not if you don't know that district. You're not ready. And you probably won't land that position, right? Unless there's some other things going on and you know people, all that kind of stuff. That's not even what we're talking about today. But I'm talking about in terms of just your preparation for this interview. Let's go to number 3. Number three says, what is the evidence of my instructional leadership effectiveness? Oh man, that's a big one, man. I need like 3 hours for that one. Listen, what is the evidence of my instructional leadership effectiveness? So again, I'm not giving you questions that an employer would ask. I'm giving you questions that you should ask of yourself, because chances are great that the employer will ask you about instructional leadership. I mean, I don't know what it is to lead a school if you're not instructionally sound in your leadership. Because we're talking about you as professional developer. We're talking about you as a person that plays a significant role in growing and developing teachers relative to the impact that they have on children in the classroom. So now I'm asking you to ask yourself, what is the evidence of my instructional leadership effectiveness? So in terms of what you did as an assistant principal, now let's say that hypothetically you were a full-time disciplinarian, and the only time, because I don't want to accuse anybody on this call of this scenario, but I will say that this happens. You were a full-time disciplinarian. The only time you got into classrooms was during evaluation season, and it was rush, 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 so you can get that observation and so you can drop that evaluation so that the teacher can read it and sign it, and then you're done with that. That's not instructional leadership. That's just complying with due dates. That's all that is. It's, let me say it again. That is not instructional leadership. All that is complying with due dates. It makes no teacher better. It doesn't make you better. So now let's say, but you were that person. That's who you were. You full-time disciplinarian, lunch aid, bus duty, you know, all that dirty work, roll up your sleeves, all the work that the principal don't want to do, whatever it is. I'm saying to you, you better be able to speak intelligently about how you will be that instructional leader once you get there, which includes how you're going to format and conduct your pre-observation conferences and the significance of those conferences, and your post-observation conferences and the significance of them in terms of your immediate feedback, and how you guys mutually agree upon what are the areas that we will work upon toward making that teacher stronger, greater, that much more effective in what he or she does in the classroom. That is critical. You got to go in there and be able to win them over with your information on instructional leadership. Number four, what is the evidence of my supervisory effectiveness? See, you're going to be supervising staff in a way that you've never done before, because supervising staff as an assistant principal is very different from supervising staff as a principal. And when we talk about that, I don't mean solely in the instructional realm, but just supervising staff relative to managing a school as well. So you're leader, but you're managing. There are times when you're managing. As much as I like to put emphasis on the word leader, you are managing. And how you manage the building, how you manage staff in addition to leading staff, when there's conflict among staff, or when you've got staff who are grappling with their own personal issues outside of the class, outside of the school, they come into the school, and just everything in between. Supervising staff, motivating staff, inspiring staff. What's the evidence of your supervisory effectiveness, right? Number five, what role will the analysis of data play in my leadership? So it's like me asking you right now, what role does the analysis of data play in your assistant principalship right now? See, what role does it play? Are you a data guru? Are you one that's able to disaggregate data to its smallest parts and then use that to formulate a plan of action toward moving the school that much closer to the goal, or helping teachers to do the same within their classrooms? What role does data play in your leadership, and how will it play out in terms of your interview? You got to be able to talk intelligently about how you break down data. That matters, right? Number six, how will I ensure that equity abounds under my leadership? Oh man, let's spend a little time on this. I just looked at my clock. I could slow it down a little, just a tad. How will I ensure that equity abounds under my leadership? You know, and equity means so many different things in so many different places. You can be in a wealthy district and children are coming from privilege, and the issues that we may see in a rural school or an urban school, we may not see at the same magnitude that we may see in a suburban school. So equity therefore takes on a different meaning, right? It's still relevant. It's still highly relevant in that environment, but it may mean something very different. But now you come into a tougher situation. You got all these gaps in achievement along racial, ethnic lines, along gender lines, along socioeconomic lines, regular ed, special needs lines. So you got all these gaps. And here you are going into this interview, and you got to be able to sell somebody, a superintendent, that with these gaps that exist within the school, I've got a plan. Right. I've got objectives and I've got a strategy, and it's all rooted in this word equity. Right. It's all rooted. So, and here I'm talking about at the school level, and I'm talking about at the classroom level, not at the district level, but at the classroom level, I'm going into that building with the understanding that in a typical classroom within the school, there are, let's just use a round number. There are 25 learners, and thereby there are 25 different sets of needs. There are 25 different ways that young people may think and process information, as people call learning styles, right? There are 25 different experiential backgrounds, 25 different realities, 25 different challenges, obstacles, needs, interests, pressures, demands, the goals and aspirations, the way one is motivated, the one way is one is inspired, the way one may, again, process information. It's all there. So now that person interviewing you, that superintendent or assistant superintendent, they're cognizant of that. They're fully aware of that. So now here comes you in the interview. Hey, candidate, I've got this diverse population, right? I've got black students, including black young men, black young ladies. I've got white students. I've got Latinx students. I've got students of Asian descent, but then I've got LGBTQ students, right? I've got just all this diversity, right? So now, hey, leader, talk to me about how you approach that. Talk to me how you approach every student's needs being met in a classroom as relates to your collegial relationship with each teacher in the building, or at least the teachers that you supervise. You've got to be able to talk about that, especially in 2021. Because see, when I was coming up as a principal, my first principalship in 98, and my second one, I think it was in 2003. Equity wasn't in the lexicon. You know, what equity means was, but equity in terms of language and education, that wasn't in the education lexicon. I didn't have to prepare for that word to come my way, because I can guarantee that it wasn't. But now in 2021, if I'm superintendent, I'm going to hit you with the equity probably as you're walking through the door. I mean, it's that important. I'm going to hit you with equity very early. So you've got to be ready for that. So now you got to look at yourself, because here's the question. How will I ensure that equity abounds under my leadership? So I'm talking about, how will you ensure that it abounds if you're hired? But I also would ask, well, how did it abound where you were? Right. And if you were full-time disciplinarian, you could still talk about equity. And just in terms of how you dealt with the students that came down to your office with a referral, right? So much more to be said about that, but you know, let me just be mindful of the time. Number seven, how will cultural relevance and cultural responsiveness factor into my instructional leadership? Now, before I elaborate on that one, let me say this to you. I know definitively. Every superintendent that interviews a principal candidate is not going to talk about cultural relevance, cultural responsiveness. I know that, because not every superintendent that I work with in my capacity of consultant has a need nor desire for me to address this in a presentation, right? So in their world, they probably think that this is not relevant. In my mind, it is relevant. I don't care who you are, where you are, it's relevant. But in their mind, they may be thinking, okay, this not really relevant. Principal Pei, we want you to talk about X, Y, and Z. And then here comes me. What about cultural relevance, cultural response? Nah, that's not an issue here. Okay, no problem. But see, my thinking is, no, it is, but you don't realize it. Because you've got diversity in the school. You've got multiple different cultures in a school, multiple different cultures in a classroom, and they're seeing the lesson. They're seeing learning. They're receiving the lesson. They're receiving the learning through their cultural lens. You're receiving me through your cultural lens, right? So you got two people on the call, and depending on their cultural background will dictate how they're processing, how they're receiving, how they're internalizing my message, including the way I'm delivering it, right? That matters. So I'm saying to you, it works the same way in the classroom. And if the teacher is of a mindset that I don't even see race, I don't even see ethnicity, I don't see color, I don't see culture, I'm colorblind and culture blind, then there's invariably a problem in that school as it relates to cultural relevance and also being culturally responsive toward the student. It's there. Whether or not one wants to own up to it. So you may go to an interview where the superintendent thinks like Principal Kafele. And right up there at the top of the interview, now this is not going to be something that's buried way down. This can be like as you're walking in the door, as I say, figuratively speaking, I'm a teacher. Principal candidate, talk to me about how you will ensure that the youngsters see themselves in the learning, that the youngster sees the cultural relevance to the math class, the math lesson, the science lesson, the social studies lesson, the language arts lesson, the whatever lesson. Tell me how you're going to make that real for that youngster so that that youngster can embrace what's being taught, as opposed to that youngster seeing what's being received is not relevant to my life after 3 o'clock when the dismissal bell rings. That's critical. So again, just to make it concrete, if I'm superintendent and I'm interviewing a candidate and you can't speak intelligently about the significance of a teacher being culturally relevant in a classroom, I don't need you on my team. And let me just paint a clearer picture. If I'm a superintendent, I'm in an urban district. You could bet your last dollar on that. I'm in an urban district because urban is all I know. It's like being in a fish tank. You take me out of that fish in a fishbowl. You take me out of that fishbowl. I don't know what's going on out here, right? So all I know is urban. So if you're coming to me and I'm the superintendent and I'm going to interview you and you and I can't have a dialogue intelligently on being culturally relevant and responsive, then chances are I'm going to be very friendly and say it was good talking to you and I'll call you, right? So, and then we're done, right? So be prepared for that. Let me keep moving. Number 8, how will I ensure a school climate and culture conducive to high academic performance? Again, let me just remind anybody that checked in late. These are not questions that I conjured up that the interviewer may ask you. These are questions that I stand behind that you must ask yourselves as you prepare for the interview. So now I'm saying, how will I ensure a school climate and culture conducive to high academic performance? When I say the climate, I'm simply talking about the mood of the school. What is it that you will do? How will your leadership bring about a mood that is conducive? See, like think about that person that wakes up in a good mood and you see him in the morning. Oh my God, you're in such a good mood. Well, something is going on in this person's life and they're feeling up. You're in a great mood. Well, schools have moods. And when you walk into a school, you can gauge the mood as soon as you walk in the front lobby. Classrooms have moods. And when you walk in fact, you could sense the mood in the hallway. But the culture, we're talking about the lifestyle, how we're living in that building. Hey, principal candidate that's in my office, talk to me about how you will take, because the lifestyle right now, principal candidate, superintendent talk, it's toxic. I'm going to tell you right now, it's toxic there. So you want to work here. So principal candidate, talk to me how you take this toxic culture and turn it into a lifestyle that is conducive to all staff, all students wanting to having the willingness to perform at high levels, right? So climate and culture, let's keep moving. Time is flying. How will I keep staff motivated, right? Are you a motivator? Do you understand, and watch this word I use, the science, the art of motivating? Because you can't be the principal, and when people look at you, they get depressed, because that happens. You can't be the principal, and when people think of you on Sunday, like it's Sunday afternoon, they're not in the school, but they have a thought of you, and now it's like, oh my God, I don't want to go back to that place tomorrow. You can't be that person, and we know those people exist in this world. How will you keep staff fired up? You got to be able to talk to that interviewer about that. And then number 10 on part one, what prior exposure have I had with managing a budget? Oh man. If you didn't have any, then you better be able to talk intelligently about your checkbook, right? Because at the end of the day, especially when you talk about a district with zero-based budgeting, where you starting from ground zero, there's not a lot of time to train you. You got to be able to go in there and just kind of start, right? So now in that interview, you got to be talking about how you're going to manage a budget. You got to know something about budgets. You got to know something about account lines and all that. You've got to know that, right? So again, questions to ask yourself as you prepare for the interview. That's part one. Let's go to part two. Part two, number one. What are my leadership strengths? In other words, it's very common for a superintendent or an interviewer to say to you, tell me your leadership strengths. And it's very easy for someone to sit there like, I guess I'm just good with people. You know, like off the top of your head, I guess I'm just really good with people. Come on. So I'm saying to you, and I'm glad you came on this webinar today. You got to think about what are my strengths. You need to document your strengths, and then you need to study your strengths, because sometimes we take it for granted. Like I don't know all my strengths. I have to sit down and brainstorm, and then just kind of process it, and then I'll have it. But right now I'm not in a line of work where people ask me my leadership strengths. So therefore I don't think about it. I just wake up in the morning and live my life. But you're going to an interview. You have to be able to engage in that discussion, because there's a good chance that someone's going to ask you, what are your strengths in leadership? And you got to be able to talk about that with so much efficacy that person says, man, that's who I want on the team. This person is confident. This person believes in him or herself. But by the same token, they might ask you, what are your leadership deficiencies? This is a tricky one, because if you go in there and say, I don't have any, you might have cost yourself a position. See, you got to be honest, but there's a way to take a negative question, so to speak, and turn it into a positive. So for example, you may say something like this off the top of my head. Well, one of my deficiencies is that I'm just so overly committed to my work. Right. Well, y'all hear me? I'm so overly committed to my work that I just give it everything. And sometimes that's at the expense of my life away from the work. Right. So now you turned a negative into a positive. You said, I got deficiencies. But see, but the person receiving it knows, but that's correctable. That's just putting an emphasis on self-care. That's just putting an emphasis on balance and your emotional health, but you're able to still admit a deficiency, but you presented it as a positive, that I'm just so overly committed, right? Or, but it doesn't have, but, and that's just off the top of my head, right? There's a million things you can come up with. That's where your brainstorming comes and your creativity in terms of how you take what could be a negative and turn it into a positive. Those are the words I want you to remember. How I take a negative and turn it into a positive, or how I take a weakness and turn it into a strength, right? Turn it into a win for everybody. Let me keep going. Number three, because I want to build in time for a couple of questions. I'm going to go fast. What is my skill level on master scheduling, right? Now, let me tell you something. I remember spending like whole summers working on master schedules until I got wise. See, I got wise over the years and figured out, man, not only am I not the smartest person in the building, but I don't have to be the smartest person in the building. I'm the principal, but I got smart people on this staff. Why don't I start utilizing their talent? So then I began to delegate, right? Especially with the hungry folks who wanted to become administrators. Well, let me give you something administrative to do. I'll oversee this schedule, but I want you to make it work. Oh man. They do a master schedule much better than I could, but I still understood how to do it. You got to be able to walk into that meeting, especially those of you at the secondary level, and you got to be able to talk intelligently how you can build a master schedule, and that the academic program will drive the schedule and not the other way around, with the schedule driving the program. Because if the schedule drives the program, I don't need you. I need the programs to drive the schedule, not the fit of a box of boxes to dictate where students are throughout the course of the day. No, the programs do that the way we envision them to do that. And then we build the schedule around that. Always remember that sequence. Number four, how would I assess my planning and organizational skills? If I'm interviewing you, I promise you, if I were, I never will, because I don't want to be a superintendent. But if I ever did, I'd ask you this when walking through the door. I guess I'd be saying a whole lot to you as you walk through the door. Because I want to know about your planning skills. I want to know about your organizational skills. Am I bringing in somebody who's all over the place, or am I bringing someone in who's structured? Am I bringing someone in who plans, or am I bringing someone in who wings it? I need to know the difference. And that resume is going to tell me the story anyway. But then as I get to talk, sit down with you and talk to you, I want to gauge, is this a planner? Is this someone who has organizational skill? Or is this someone who's just kind of all over the place, right? That matters. Let me go to number five. I'm going fast because I want to build in a few minutes for question and answer if there are some. What is my assessment of the significance of professional development for staff, and how would I ensure that it is ongoing? In other words, I would ask you about your philosophy. I want you to be prepared to walk into that interview to be able to talk about your philosophy of professional development for your staff. Here's what I don't mean. I don't mean, oh yeah, professional development is definitely necessary for my staff. I don't mean that. I want you to be able to go in there and you talking intelligently about the kinds of professional development that your staff would need that's rooted in your mission, your leadership mission, and your leadership purpose, and your leadership vision for your school. That's what I'm talking about. See, so when you think about your, not your school mission and vision, but your leadership mission and vision. So when you think about your leadership mission, your leadership purpose, your leadership vision and mission, whatever I said so many, they rhyme. So I don't know which one I said. So I said one twice. So I'm saying to you, how will your profession, your philosophy of professional development tie into that? You got to be able to go into that interview and talk about that, right? Number six. Do I have a skill set for effective master scheduling? I guess I repeated myself on that one. So let's keep moving. How will I engage the parents of the students, right? How will I engage the parents of the students? You got to be able to talk about that. This could be a school in a town where on a good day, five parents come to a PTA. On a good day, on a normal day, the two that are the most vocal. But on a good day, five come. It's that school. That person wants to hear from you. What is it that you're going to do that brings 50%, 75%, 100% of the parents to the school? If I had more time, I could give you the answer to that one, because I figured that out, especially in the virtual world. But we ain't got time for that. You got to join me on Saturday mornings. So I'm saying to you, how will I engage the parents? You've got to go into that interview ready to talk about how you will maximize parental engagement. maximize parental involvement. You can't go in there fumbling over that one, right? You got to go in there and you got to be able to speak intelligently. Number eight, we're almost done. Here's the question. The interviewer is going to say to you, why should I hire you? Why should the district hire you? And you can't sit there, because I'm a good person. That's not going to work, right? You got to be able to, you got to go into your bag of tricks, so to speak. You got to already have the answer before you walked in. You should hire me because X, Y, Z. Anticipate the question. Why should I hire you? Because based on your test scores, which are at, and you tell them what the test scores are, it is my contention that we can raise those test scores by X percentage points. You don't want to lock yourself in a box, but we can raise those assessment scores in within 3 years significantly. And then whatever else you're going to add to that, but just why should I hire you? It's got to be rooted in student achievement. Got to be. If you're in there talking about, we're going to reduce the discipline. I mean, that could be, discipline could be important, but if you got discipline problems, then you best believe they're achievement problems. So you still got to tie that answer to achievement. So as you talk achievement, you can fold in the discipline, but you got to be able to demonstrate you should hire me because let's tie that into number nine. What final questions do I have? In other words, they say to you, what final questions do you have of me? Oh, put your ear to your speaker real quick on this one. If you go in there and they ask you what final questions do you have of me and you say, oh, I'm good. I don't have anything. You were thorough. You can kiss that job goodbye. Now, is that 100% across the board? Probably not. There's probably someone that answered, I don't have anything, and they got hired. But I'm talking to us right now. What final questions do you have, ma'am, sir? Oh, I'm good. I'm thank you. You might as well start looking for another job. See, you have to be attentive in that interview. So that thing that topic that did not come up, even though you may not be curious about it, give the impression that you are. Or maybe that topic that came up, but you could get clarity from it, give the impression that you want more information on that. So, but you better find a way to ask at least two questions, if not three. It shows that you are engaged. If you sit there, you know, you feel like you in your mind, I just hit it out the park, man. This was a good one. And then they said, what further questions might you have? Oh, I'm good. I don't have any. Don't do that, y'all. Don't do that. Have something. Have about two or three. That shows them, oh man, this person was engaged. They want more. It shows you hungry. You want more information. Let me wrap this up. Number 10. This is a big one, y'all. How will I close the deal? You know, you've never gone to buy a car and the salesman didn't close the deal. You never went and bought a property, a house or something, and the salesman didn't close the deal. We're not going to just take you on a test drive and let you drive the car and look at it, or take you to a house and let you look at the property. And then we go back to the office and talk about the property and end it right there with loose ends like this. You got to close this. You got to tell them that you want this job. You got to you got to end that interview with them being convinced, I'm hungry. I want this job. I'm your guy. I'm your gal. When should I anticipate hearing from you? You aren't going to be cocky with it now. You know, you're going to be real, like, you're going to be cool about it. You know, like I'm doing right now. You're going to be cool about this, right? But you're going to close the deal. Because if you don't close it, it's like this. It's just dangling. You got to close it out, folks. So look here, I want to build in some time, but let me give you this. Take a picture of this screen. I know a lot of you probably join me on the Saturday virtual Assistant Principal Leadership Academy every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock Eastern on Facebook Live, Twitter Live, and YouTube Live. But if you don't, join me this Saturday. We talk for an hour. We're talking assistant principal leadership, but we're talking leadership in general at the school level. Come on and join me. You can go to my Facebook page and just refresh your computer at 10:55 so I can shout you out. Or Twitter live at Principal Gafele, YouTube at Virtual AP Leadership Academy, either of those. Or you can go to my Facebook Virtual AP Leadership Academy page and you can join me that way. But 11 o'clock Eastern every Saturday. I'm on live sitting in this chair, right? And then you see my books on the bottom of the screen. You see the website. You see my contact information. With that said, let me turn it over to Honor. And if there's any closing thoughts, let's jump into it.
We'll let Gracie handle some questions for you.
Gracie, yeah.
Broody, one of the questions that came up pretty quickly was, you know, a lot of people have a long history in education. You know, they may be applying for a head principal's job or later on. So what is the good length for an educational resume? Because it's hard to get everything in on one or two pages.
Yeah. You said a good length?
Length.
Yeah. I'm glad you asked that question because I should have brought it up myself. Let me tell you something, folks. As a principal who interviewed teachers, this is me now. Someone else may feel different. I have no interest in a two-page resume. And I'm going to tell you something else. And this is me. But I know a lot of my colleagues agree with this. I have zero interest in looking at a portfolio. Right. I've never looked at a portfolio in my life. So they bring these thick volumes with all this stuff in it. Do you like to see it? I'll be friendly and say, okay, and I'm looking at it, but I'm really not looking at it. But because what I want to look at is the candidate. See, I want to look at you. I want to look at your posture. I want to look at your confidence. I want to hear you. That's what I want. I'll know. I don't need to look at all that stuff. I'll know from just having to talk with you. So the resume. I don't need two pages. I've been an educator since 1988, right? Some of you, you know my resume. You know what I've accomplished. But guess what? My resume is one page, and I could justify four pages just on the awards. I have over 150 of them, right? But one page resume for a guy that's been in education over 30 years, right? And the books, the lectures, the consulting, one page. That's it. Because I know that someone reading it doesn't have the time nor the energy to sift through a book. So you got to put your best stuff. Like, you know, talk about some artists got their best hits. You got to put your best hits on that resume, right? That's how you got to do that.
Good.
Anybody else?
Now, Baruti, somebody actually in this group has a 15-minute phone screener interview tomorrow for a principal's position. Anything, best advice for that?
Yeah. Thank you. You giving me the best stuff here. Because here's the thing. I made a video. You know, on my channel, Virtual AP Leadership Academy, all of you subscribe to that. That's important. But then go to the back of the channel and I have the interview videos. One of the videos is for virtual interviews, right? Because the virtual interview is not the same as the in-person interview. That's a whole different thing. This is my background that I use for all recordings, but on an interview, I'm not going to use this because of the curtain and everything. It's going to be something a little bit different on the interview. Although I don't plan to do any interviews for the rest of my life, right? But I'm saying if it was that hypothetically, I'd have to change this a little bit, but I'm saying to you, I got a 1 hour long virtual interview video on that channel, Virtual AP Leadership Academy. Take a look at it. Because it is not the same animal. And you could go in there prepared as you want to be, but because you were not prepared for a virtual interview, you could run into some problems. So I give you a variety of variables to consider for that interview. So just take a look at it. If you're so inclined, send me an email later on tonight. I'm not going to tell you my email address. Go to the website at principalcafele.com and you will see it. But I will respond. But if you send me a dissertation, I can't get to it today. But if you can send me a short one, I'll be on it tonight. Anything else?
Well, one quick question. Do they start with a mission statement at the top of that resume? Or
philosophy? You know, you could, but a lot of times those mission statements, they're kind of cliche-ish and they don't always capture the attention of the interviewer. I've seen them a million times. You know, sometimes they call it their vision statement or whatever. And no, I want to go right to that work experience and I want to see what you did, right? I'll catch your cliches when we have the conversation, right? I want to see what you did and why I feel that you may be somebody that can move the academic needle. You know, academic, social, and emotional growth of the students in my school. That's what I want to see out of you.
Gosh, Barita, you just have given us so many great pearls of wisdom today to think about going into those interviews and what a good resume looks like and telling our stories exceptionally well. And just want to make sure that all the people out there know that Barita is one of our keynote speakers this summer at the NAESP National Conference in Chicago. Right now we're planning on it being face-to-face. Keep your fingers crossed. And we're really excited to have Barita as one of our great keynote speakers.
I'm excited.
And thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.